friend of mine was a Catholic religious nun in a teaching order for much of her life. She left the order, as so many have, continued working for the Catholic Church, and then a few years later she married a former Marist lay brother. And I was mighty interested to know how this most unusual marriage was proceeding, and asked her a few questions about it. She said to me, "Well, Hugh, every night we put a question to each other. Is there anything I have said or done today that has caused hurt, confusion or misunderstanding?" Great question, isn't it? Is there anything I have done today that's caused hurt, confusion or misunderstanding? And she said, the reason we do that, of course, is that as religious, we were trained to carry out a daily examine of conscience and to pinpoint those things in the day where we might have hurt or confused other people, and if possible, to go and put things right and make amends. And that's what I want to talk about this morning, how to carry out an examination of conscience. Because in this morning's gospel reading, it talks, as it so often does in John's gospel, about the contrast between light and darkness. And it says that, you know, the people who greet the gospel as a great expression of hope will want to move towards the light and make sure that the light can light up everything about their lives, whereas those who prefer the deeds of darkness will retreat into the darkness. So in Lent, it's a very good thing to be doing, to be examining our conscience and putting things right. Very good time, for instance, to make our confession. I'll be doing that in the coming week. I always make my confession to a priest before great festivals. And if you want to know more about that, look at the Red New Zealand Prayer Book that came out in 1989. Pages 790 to 791 reveals a lot about it. If you don't have a Red New Zealand Prayer Book, there's one, there's some in the back pews there by the altar. But many Anglicans I know don't make their confession, and still this examination of conscience is extremely important for them. I think of a retired evangelical priest who lived in the same street that I did in my growing up years. And every Saturday night, he and his wife would review the events of the week, think about the things that were an obstacle between them and God, and they'd have their private penitential service so that they were ready to receive communion the next morning on Sunday, because they believed that's what the old prayer book expected of people. So they had, in their own way, from a very different tradition, a habit of regular examination of conscience. Of course, the trouble is, as the years roll by, we get forgetful. And that's always a problem for me when I'm preparing to make my confession. I've forgotten a lot about what's happened in the last few months. I keep a journal, which I write in first thing every morning, not a dear diary thing, but a looking beneath the surface of my life, the deeper patterns, and about the way in which my relationship with God's proceeding. I do find that quite useful as a recollection of what I've done wrong. But not everybody, of course, keeps a journal. So how else might we go about examining our conscience? Well, a very good place to start would be 1 Corinthians 13, you know, that famous lesson that's always read out at wedding services, and in particular, verses 4 to 7. And instead of saying love, substitute your own name. Hugh is patient. Hugh is kind and envies no one. Hugh is never boastful, nor conceited, nor rude, never selfish, not quick to take offence. Hugh keeps no score of wrongs, does not gloat over other men's sins, but delights in the truth. Well, is that true? Actually not. And as we carry out this checklist, what they call in AA, a searching moral inventory, these few verses are a very helpful way to see in which way we've been uncharitable, or sins of the tongue against others. Another good place to start in the scriptures would be the fifth chapter of Matthew's Gospel, the Beatitudes. Very searching examination of our lives. Am I a peacemaker? Am I merciful? Have I been pure in heart? Do I stick up for the cause of right? And there's some of the most searching moral teaching in the New Testament follows the Beatitudes. That'd be another good place to start in reviewing our life. What we're looking for is a kind of heightened ethical awareness, a developing and healthy sense of conscience. You know, John Henry Newman called it the illiterate sense, and he said a healthy and alive conscience is the place where the presence of God can be found in a person's life more than any other place. And we're living in a time where there are pluses and minuses that help us and will hinder us in having this healthy sense of conscience. The minus thing is the kind of therapeutic culture that's developed in Western society. I can't help it that I do this. I had a very vivid example of this in the parish where I was a curate. The local milkman was a notorious alcoholic, but he'd put his life right. He'd married a woman in our congregation, and my training vicar made him the parish treasurer because he thought it would be an inspiring example to the local community of the power of the gospel to transform lives. Unfortunately, this man was poly-addicted, so he was also a compulsive gambler. And it turned out halfway through my time there, he'd invested much of the parish's money on a variety of dog tracks up and down the length and breadth of the British Isles, and had lost the money. And well, my vicar had a nervous breakdown, and he went to this private psychiatric hospital in Northampton to confront John about this. John was a trainee social worker, so he would stay at this place, which was a drying out place for rock stars and movie stars. John was there at the taxpayer's expense. And when George confronted him, he said, you can't blame me, it's my condition. Well, actually, we're all responsible. And when we make our confession to God, we're not making any excuses anymore. I did this, and this, and this, and this. On the other hand, it is helpful to have some insight as to why we're doing this, and this, and this, in an attempt to break out of the situation. There are also, helpfully, new sins, which have become more exposed and more discussed and more pointed to in our time. Drink driving, domestic abuse, elder abuse, things which tended to be, ignored or papered over in times past have now become very high profile. There are also new sins that weren't there before. Internet pornography. What was once the preserve of dirty old men in raincoats has now become almost universally available to people. Cyberbullying. You're parking your car and you ding somebody else and you drive off without leaving a note. These are the new sins that weren't there so much before. I find too that just as I'm getting more forgetful as the years roll by, also every now and then unexpected memories from part of my life come up and are powerfully present. Things that I hadn't thought about for years, and I think, oh, I did that, did I? T.S. Eliot points to this wonderfully in the famous Four Quartets. Often think about these words. Let me disclose the gifts reserved for age, the rending pain of reenactment of all you have done and been, the shame of motives late revealed, and the awareness of things ill done and done to others harm, which once you took for exercise of virtue, then fool's approval stings and honour stains. From wrong to wrong the exasperated spirit proceeds, unless restored by that refining fire. And I think when these unexpected memories come up, this is a great opportunity to bring them before the Lord and seek his forgiveness. And it's also a way of heightening our ethical awareness. I think the part of our mind is bringing all these things up, out into the light at last. And here's the final thought. How do we have a sense of conscience? Where did that come from? How did our parents train us in a sense of right and wrong? They trained us in habits of virtue. There's a word we hardly ever use. My father once said to me in my teenage years, never use that word in my presence, it sounds priggish. But Thomas Aquinas talked about this and he said, how do we learn to be good people? It's by acquiring habits which in certain instinctive situations will mean that we will react well and we will instinctively seek the good. This is why in the army they train infantry and battle skills and survival skills, so that when the office has been cleaned up and it's chaos and confusion all around you and the NCO isn't there to tell you what to do, you'll instinctively do the right thing. And it's good if we can be training ourselves in habits of virtue, training ourselves in things that are more likely to make us good people in the future. And this last week, somebody said a very memorable thing to me about the people she lives in the midst of. She said, they've got lots of guilt, but no conscience. And that's a problem today, that many children, I think, have not been trained in virtue. And that's where the problems come. And the last thought I want to leave you with is this. All this requires moral effort. All of this requires putting our shoulder to the wheel about training ourselves to be good people and training ourselves to have a heightened conscience. But if I left you with the impression that it's all about pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps and it's all self-improvement, I would have done you a disservice. Thomas Aquinas said there's four natural virtues we need to encourage. Prudence, self-control or moderation, wisdom and courage. But the more we do that, the three theological virtues come to help us. Faith, hope and charity. Faith, hope and charity. The infused grace of the Holy Spirit to help us to be trained in virtue, to help us to be examining our conscience with a heightened sense of ethical awareness. Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, Holy Spirit.